Hi, this is Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like...
Y la hierba se movía, se movía, se movía.
Hello, hello, hello.
Que show, que show, que show.
How are you, Babelekis?
Con un poco de calorcillo, pero estoy muy bien.
Stop. I hate when you do a Spanish accent.
That's not Spanish, that's Argentinian.
Whatever, even worse. Oh my God.
Don't Shout do out it. To all of Argentinian listeners.
Hi.
¿Cómo estás?
Bien. How are, you know, it's hot, but we have to turn the air off because we're trying to record, like, professionally. And it might sound a little different because we have new microphones now because Babelito and I are practicing, because practice does make perfect.
That's right.
We are practicing recording separately, mm-hmm. even though we're in the same house right now.
I can hear your laugh as with an echo.
Oh my gosh. And I can hear your laugh, and all the dogs in the neighborhood can hear your laugh because it's so high pitched. That my windows are fucking cracked in here.
Oh,
but,
my God. That's part of my charm, girl.
Sure.
Sips in his coffee.
Keep saying that. You're just like turning into a giant mustache. Okay, so how charming. That mustache was so charming. Okay, so what did you do today?
So today I had my class. I had one of my favorite lectures, which is my cannibal lecture. Oh, that sounded like Hannibal Lecter.
Cannibal Lecter.
Yes.
Oh, so you talk about cannibalism. Good. Something light for the middle of the week. That's nice.
I start the lecture with maps that show the Americas full of people eating each other. And we end with a movie by Eli Roth called Green Hell. And it just basically ratifies all these fucked up ideas. But it's talking about cannibalism.
Yeah.
What did you eat today?
Oh, girl. I actually had Thai food. I had a fried rice.
¿Cómo se dice? Vegetable fried rice, that's it?
With tofu, yeah.
Ay, qué rico, boy.
Well, it was a lunch special, so I got a soup, and a spring roll, and a free drink. So, you know, shout out to lunch specials.
Shout out to... I had ¿cómo se llama?
I don't know, bitch.
Ay, tú me diste de comer, güey. La gente ya sabe que estamos en la misma casa.
Oh, yeah, because you come to my house, like, hungry, and I can tell. And I'm like, bitch,
we're Latinos Who Lunch. We're supposed to eat together.
Yeah, ¿y por qué no me llamaste? And we're like, hey, bitch, what do you want me to bring to eat? What happened to my old friend?
I was actually going to call you to see if you wanted to meet me and my mom's, but then you got to go see your mom, so I just came directly over here.
Yeah, and I'm also packing for a, like, two-month trip today.
¿A dónde vas? Ah, es que te vas de... Okay, tell everybody what you're doing, because this is very exciting.
Yeah, bitch, I'm going to the Canary Islands, and then I'm going to Portland, Maine, and I'm not going to be back till, like, July 9th.
¿A quién le importa lo que yo haga?
And you couldn't be like, hey, bitch, you need anything? No way.
Bitch, I was in cannibalistic mood. Like,
damn.
Mode. Not mood, mode. Whoa, that was wrong. So what are you going to do at the Canary Islands?
What am I doing there? I am going to be part of this festival called the ARN Culture Business Pride.
Uh-huh.
And there's also going to be the Alan Turing LGBTQ Awards. I don't know exactly what it is, y'all. I just said yes. And so by the time this podcast comes out, I'm going to be on the beach.
Nice.
On one of the Canary Islands, which I definitely had to Google where that was. It's off of the northwest coast of Africa. It's a Spanish territory. Yeah, so I'm going to be there, maybe doing an installation. Right now they're saying that the local government is not going to let me do it because it's like outside. They want me to do something outside, like on a building and
paper, you know, and fire and all that shit.
That gets tricky, but maybe we can work something out.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Felicidades, güey, no mames, an award on fucking Africa. That's so badass.
Technically, it's Spain. You know, it's like off of Morocco. But
whatever. It's still like on the other side of the world. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm on an island right now with a bunch of white Spanish people. And it's really fun, really sunny.
You should get used to my fake Spanish accent, because you're going to hear it for a whole week and it's going to drive you motherfucking crazy, dude.
I'm just going to keep to myself. You know, I'm going to take a few books. Maybe, you know, catch up on my emails. It'll be great. It'll be great.
And then after that, ¿a dónde vas?
Where am I going to go after that? Then I'm going to Portland, Maine. Mm-hmm. I have a residency at this place called Space. So if there's any listeners in the Portland, Maine area, I will be there for the whole month of June. My exhibition, it's called Pólvora. It opens on July 6th.
Why is it called Pólvora?
Because I'm going to make an installation and tie it to the tradition of fireworks in Mexico.
Nice.
And tie that to the tradition of fireworks here in the United States and how that represents violence and how we kind of sugarcoat that. And so I'm going to piñata coat it and maybe, you know, make a few comments on also the pólvora that's used in guns and gun control and things like that. So it's a multi-level exhibition, and it's going to be up through September, I believe, in this really cool in space. It's like a performance space / art gallery /... So it's cool. And they have an artist residency program. So I have an apartment like in the building, I think. So I'll be there for a month.
That's cool. You'll be escaping the cruel, cruel summers here in Vegas.
It's so a cruel, cruel summer. Who sings that? Do you know?
No sé, yo nomás lo viste en un comercial de, like, algo.
Bananarama, girl.
Oh, Bananarama. That's right. That's right. Well, that's exciting. You know what's interesting? That this is, like, another topic where you're exploring the intercultural relationships that Mexican visual and material culture has with other parts of the world. Because, like, with your piñata, it's about, you know, Dominican friars and pre-Columbian traditions and Asian paper. And the same thing with pólvora. Like, pólvora is, like, this worldwide phenomenon. Like, it's not just about one single culture. Like, when I think of fireworks, my mind directly goes into Oaxaca because when we went to Huacachula, like just the fireworks calling out the souls onto earth. And then every time there's a celebration of a saint in Oaxaca, I mean, in different parts of Mexico, you hear fireworks. It's almost like the sound, the boom, like calls the soul of that saint onto earth. And then you properly celebrate them. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I'll be doing that, and then finally I'll be back in July. So we recorded a bunch of episodes ahead of time. So you'll hear the interviews, and then you'll hear us catching up with each other, like call your girlfriend style, like this on our travel microphones. So that's gonna be cool, and especially now that you're leaving to Chicago, this will probably be the way that we do it most of the time.
So some listeners were complaining because we made a joke that we were going to stop the podcast. And they're like, no. So this is proof that we're not stopping. Like, we invested. Oh, this is a good opportunity. We had some listeners who actually donated money. Yes. I know they want to remain anonymous, but we want to say thank you. Thanks to you guys, we have money to buy things like this, like this microphones. And yes, like everybody that donated to our PayPal, thank you so much.
You know, we are sponsored by a few companies right now, but Babelito and I are still not making any money off of this podcast. We're actually still losing money. So we're going to go, I think, totally independent soon so that we don't have to do like these required ads that we're doing sometimes. And just so you know, you can always donate to us. We have a PayPal. You can also Venmo us or Cash App us at Latinos Who Lunch, and just send us cash in an envelope, like whatever you want. We take your donation.
Lo que sea, lo que sea.
But that's probably going to be a more regular thing that we do once we go mm-hmm. completely independent, just because, this does take a lot of time and money. And if every person that listened to this podcast gave us like $1, you know, boom. Like we would be good. You know
rich!
What I mean? I'm rich, bitch. For like 2 days. But oh my God. Oh, if you hit the lottery, what would be the first thing that you bought?
I will buy a house for my parents.
Okay, let me rephrase it. If you won $10,000, what's the first thing you would buy?
I will... Oh my God, what would I buy? I don't know. I think another car. No, not another car. I don't know, man. Like, I hate shopping. So $10,000, I don't know. Maybe tickets to some festival. Maybe a trip to Spain to go to Primavera Sound. Like, seriously, I don't know. Or, like, put it into my financial aid. Dead. So
that's it. That's what I would do. Put it in my financial aid. Pay down. Damn, that's sad. How tragic are our lives?
That's sad. I mean, but okay. So, espérate. Si te dieran, let's say $100,000, what would you do with that money?
I would put a down payment on a house.
Yeah.
For my mom.
See, that's both of our goals. Like, I want to buy a house for my parents. Pobrecitos se van a quedar esperando. Se van a quedar esperando.
Oh my God, bitch. Like, I looked at my bank account today and I was like, fuck. Like, what was the point of going to college?
Ay, no, ni me digas.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. Like, I feel like finally with this new job, I'm not going to be paycheck to paycheck, but all of my life. I remember when I got my first job. My friend said, once you start working, you're never going to stop. And I'm like, shut up. And that was when I was like 16. And here I am, like still like fucking working, and I'm 35. But ever since that day, and if it wasn't for my parents' help, I'm super like, thankful. Paycheck to paycheck, man. It's always a struggle every 2 weeks or every month. It's crazy.
But, you know, we got to do what we got to do. And to all those listeners that were really wigging out that we might not be a podcast anymore, make sure to send your donations at Latinos Who Lunch at PayPal.com to keep us going, or at Latinos Who Lunch on Venmo and Cash App. So, Babelito, what else should we talk about on this very special Guara Guara La Cuchara? Oh, you know what I want to talk about? Let's talk about the last episode.
Okay,
let's do it. I do want to apologize. We didn't say it in the beginning, but the audio for the Cynthia Lee Fontaine interview was kind of bad, and we did have to spend a lot of time editing it just to make it kind of audible.
Yeah.
So what you heard was us editing it for hours to make it sound the way that it did. Mm-hmm. So sorry about that. We didn't record it ourselves. That was all done through DragCon, and you know how it goes, like when you're in the moment and you know the microphone, you know the queens talk like directly into the microphones at one point,
and they get excited,
so the levels were crazy, and I was just like trying not to faint the whole time. And all in all though, it was a pretty cool interview, and hopefully you guys weren't too weirded out that you couldn't hear the audience questions. We tried to like edit it so that you could kind of figure out what the question was,
yeah,
without us like having to spend another hour like inserting what the question was. Oh my God.
That would have been something.
Yeah.
But what was I going to ask you? But wait, like what else are you going to do in the summer? Like, are you just working? Cause you come back after July, right?
Yeah, bitch. I'd never stop working. Oh, what are you talking about?
Well, I just wanted you to tell people what your plans are.
Oh, you just want me to talk about you. Here we go. No, just kidding. Well, actually, it is about you because, you know, people find out about this podcast and they want a piece of it. It's so awesome, you know? Like, anytime that I do any kind of exhibition and the directors or the curators know about Latinos Who Lunch, then they try to get you involved, which is pretty cool. So, at the Berman Museum this fall, opening I believe it opens early September, so I'll be working near Philadelphia all of August. Mm-hmm. Shout out to all our listeners in Philly.
Shout out.
And Baltimore, because it's pretty close. Yes. I'm going to be in that area because I'm doing this huge installation at the Berman Museum at Ursinus College. I think that's how you say it. It's in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And shout out to Charlie. He hired Babelito to be the curator of another exhibition that I'm going to be doing on the top floor of the museum, mm-hmm. with all paintings, like piñata paintings. So you chose 14 paintings for me.
Yes, 15 paintings
to total, make
yes.
replicas of. So that's what yes. I will be doing in the month of July, bitch. I will be in my tiny studio just gluing paper to paper for 12 hours a day and just being angry because I did this to myself and I didn't plan ahead. But I have a whole month to do it. So that's I can do it. I believe.
Do you want to get into it? Do you want to talk about a little bit more about the exhibition and some of the decisions? Because this is actually a very interesting process. We always talk about an exhibition and curating, but I don't think people really know what the process is to actually put together an exhibition.
Sure. Great. Go ahead.
Let's do it. So the first step was that the museum approached you, right?
Right.
And what did they say?
They said, here's all our money. And I said, cha-ching, thank you. No, wouldn't that be so nice?
That would be so nice.
So, I mean, the art world is very complicated. And I can hear when you're drinking out of that damn fucking corporate sludge that you're drinking. Okay, so when you are an artist, it is really hard because work isn't constant, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so you don't have really like a set income. So you have to just try to take as many opportunities as you can. What's mm-hmm. really cool is some curators are really behind your work. So they will share your work with other museums and other people. And I am in this really cool show. Curated by Joanne Northrup, that was at the Nevada Museum of Art in Reno.
Oh, that was so good. I can't get over it.
And I think Charlie saw my piece in that show. And then he asked Joanne about it. And then that's when the conversation started. So it's all through like doing other work that you get more work. That's how it is for me anyways.
Yeah.
In the art world. So,
but that goes to show you that you have to put your stuff everywhere because it's not just about having one show. Some I know a lot of kids out of school, they think because they have one show a year, they're supposed to get famous, but you got to keep producing nonstop.
Yeah, and they have to see, I've noticed too, is that they like that I'm always doing something, and they like to see like that there's results, that I actually like finish mm-hmm. my projects, and I think that's really important. Yeah. So, they approached me, and since it's like a legit museum, they flew me out, and I got to meet the curator, and I got to see Philly, and then I went to Collegeville. They showed me the museum, and then they just kind of showed me the space, and then that's when it's up to me to kind of make a proposal.
Right.
Do
they give you a budget first, and then you make the proposal, or they...
Yeah, so in that initial meeting, you talk about budget and like just to get an idea of how much money they're thinking. Mm-hmm. Because if the budget is like $3, then I'm like, okay, great, I'm gonna fly in for I'll fly in for 2 minutes and then go home. You know what I mean? And so that's when you start negotiating. It was really great. This museum and other places too. Just through that first meeting, they found mm-hmm. out that I had this podcast. The curator listened to the podcast and he's like, oh, your friend's an art historian. Would he be interested in curating the exhibition upstairs? And that's how you got involved. And then he started listening to Latinos Who Lunch. And this has happened multiple times. This isn't the first time this has happened, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, let's do a live episode at the museum or at this institution, which is really cool. So that's happened with the Nevada Museum of Art, and it's going to happen soon here at the Berman Museum.
And I love those gigs, man. I mean, I love every gig, right? But I love those gigs because I feel like it's an opportunity for us to like geek out about what we do. Because we can talk about it in the podcast, this and that, but I don't know, man. I've always, since I met you, I've always wanted the opportunity to engage in like critical way about the stuff that you do. So when they told me to do it, I was like, right away, like, yes, yes, yes. I like, my head was already rolling with ideas as soon as I got the first email. Like, I didn't even think about it because I have this whole vision about your art and what I think about your art, which in a way it's different from what I've heard people talk about your art. So it's like my turn, right, to talk about like my best friend's art, which is like, it's not an opportunity that you get every day. So this is pretty, pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. And that's something I've come to learn is like, if no one writes about your art, it doesn't actually exist.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds shitty to say, but if somebody doesn't write it and archives it, like on the internet or in a newspaper or in a magazine, you know, like everything is so temporary, right? So yes, you can document your work.
Yeah.
For example, installation work, you know, like mine, yeah. I can document it, but it's like, okay, where are those photos going? If those photos don't get published, then nobody sees it unless you saw it at the space that it was at. You know what I mean? So like my work still exists on the internet through people's Instagrams, through publications, through newspapers, and through articles. So it's and that's what happens. Like when I see you and other academics doing research, there's so much information that you don't have access to because nobody wrote about it or published it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just getting the information that's been published from somebody that's gone through the right chain of command or the right not chain
it's
of command,
crazy.
But the had the correct access to and the know-how to be published. So that takes a certain amount of privilege. And then once you get that information, then it's up to you to interpret, like, okay, who is this person? So, like, for instance, if you're reading about Mexican art history from a white person, it's like that's, of course, going to be different than a Mexican person. And then you can even get into it, like, what kind of Mexican person is it? Where did they come from? What are their colonial ties to Spain, right? Like, so it's such a complicated thing. So I'm all that to say is that I'm happy that you're writing about it.
Yeah.
Because you are more chuntero than my cousins. So it's great.
But so wait, so when you get have you ever gotten reviews or write ups about your show where you're like, this bitch has no idea what the fuck I'm doing?
Every time I have an art show. Every
really?
Time. Yeah.
So what are the biggest misconceptions, and do you try to fix them or you just keep doing your shit?
I mean, once an article is published, it's too late. You really don't have any say in what people write about it.
Right. And so you've never been like, fuck it, I'm going to write this person and be like, hey, you got it all wrong.
It's not worth it a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth it. What I started doing was just like not sharing the negative things and just sharing the positive things.
I see.
Because it's just not worth it. Unless it's like something that's factually incorrect.
Uh-huh.
Like they can fix that, you know, they can edit that. But if it's just like an opinion piece or a dumb critique, then that's all it is. You know what I mean?
It's so crazy because we don't think about it because we're always, I mean, artists are always under that watchful eye. Like they always have to be criticized. And in a way, criticism is what's going to make their work continue or not continue. But at all times, I've read so many things about you. And I mean, I respect a lot of these writers, but I'm just like, girl, you like, it's, I don't know. Like I see the complexity on what you do. And I feel like a lot of people just miss it. This is why I'm excited to write about it not for the first time, but
I can tell right away when somebody's asking me stuff, like if it's going to be a good article or not, just by the questions, just by the questions that they're asking me.
So what is that bad question that you're like, okay, here we go.
Oh my god, you make work about piñatas? What's on the inside? Like, oh, they're like, shit. See it like like as literal thing. And then like, or from off the bat when somebody misidentifies me as like Chicano.
Mexicano.
Or Mexican American, and I'm like, actually, and then I have to correct them.
Didn't somebody say you were from DF? From Mexico
City? Oh my god, yes. That's I think in the show that I'm in the UK, it said that on one of the press releases, but they fixed it.
Okay, good. Okay.
They're really great. So,
okay, so you got approached, you saw the site, and then they approached me. And so what is the next step?
And then you just start proposing things and, mm-hmm. and trying to get a budget together. And if they, this is the thing that's really tough that we're going to talk about in a future episode, actually. I'm excited that we recorded yesterday with one of our friends, Anita Revilla, a.k.a. Mujer Fiera. Yeah, so that's coming up in the future. But, like, knowing your worth, like, fuck, how much should I charge, you know? And since my work is installation-based, like, okay, I'm going to have a day rate, and this is how much I'm going to charge per day that I'm there.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, you realize that...
That's nothing.
Your day rate is so low compared to what other artists are getting paid for doing less than what you do. Mm-hmm. Like, I asked a friend recently how much they were getting paid to go repair an artwork.
That's just crazy.
And his hourly rate... For doing that was more than my day rate. And I'm like, no wonder these hoes are like, yes, come do a show at our museum.
Yeah,
Bish, from now on, my rates just went up, girl. So,
that's good.
Yeah.
And you'll see, like, people start saying yes.
And, okay, if I get half the amount of gigs that I did this year, next year, and I'm getting paid twice as much, it's the same... amount of income, and I'm not, like, not home away from my family, you know?
Imagine.
Oh,
that would be so nice.
But what I do appreciate, and again, shout out to Charlie at the Berman Museum, is, like, some people know your worth and what you should be getting paid. And when I had meetings with that museum, they're like, oh no, that's not enough. We're going to pay you this much, you know? And then that's when you start really figuring it out. Like, oh, this is what I can ask for. This is how much I deserve, you know? And that's, it's all a learning experience.
And it's, and that goes to show you our own colonial impositions on this idea that not only we don't think we're worth, but we have to be thankful, right? We always have to be thankful about any work that is given to us, but it's also the imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, shit, I just got away with that paycheck. And then you talk to somebody and you're like, this bitch just got away with twice as much. And I feel like I can do the same thing because I'm as good. You know what I mean? Not to measure yourself against anybody, but you need to start valuing yourself. To me, it's going to take me a long time. It's taking me a long time. And I mean, oof.
I see that you're going through the imposter syndrome phase right now.
I am.
I've been through it. I'm done with it. I have moved from imposter syndrome to exhausted syndrome because I'm fucking tired, bitch. I'm tired and I am reclaiming my time.
Yes.
America, I am reclaiming my time. And that's what's
bitch. That's beautiful.
That is what's most important to me is, like, yes, I más tiempo que vida, but for real, my time is very valuable to me. So, like, when my life right now is scheduled to the hour, okay? Mm-hmm. So, like, if something fucks that up, it fucks my whole rhythm off, my whole day off. I don't want my life to be like that for the rest of my life.
Mm-mm.
So I am reclaiming my time. So that's something that I'm going to have in mind for when I am booking stuff for next year is, like, is this worth my time? Because, I mean, there's a lot of consequences to having this career.
Yeah.
One of them that's awesome is that I get to see the world and I get to do something that I didn't dream was possible, right?
Something that you love. You get to get money from something that you love, and not a lot of us can say that.
But if you're tired all the time and angry,
you don't enjoy it.
It's not, why am I doing it? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's many sides to everything.
And, you know, like, I really thought about that, but in an academic life, you don't have a choice. And the reason why is not because, you know, I'm not worth it or whatever. It's because, in a way, you don't get to rest till you get that tenure-track job. And you gotta hustle. And, again, hustling means trying to publish as much as you can, try to put your ideas out there, or getting that book done. And putting the dissertation took 10 years. So I know putting that dissertation into a book is going to take another 5-6 years. It's going to take a lot of pain and suffering, meaning you have to sacrifice things. So I have to understand that that's my journey. I have to understand that for the next 5 to 10 years is going to be nothing but hustling. But once I get there, once I get that book and I give it to my school and they give me my tenure track job, then I can finally breathe for a little bit. And even then, right? Because you start getting more notoriety.
Yeah.
And then you get gigs and stuff, which is welcome and it's money and it's great. But it's under your terms. But not until you get that tenure track. It's very shitty. But at the same time, once you cross that line, you're set. You have a job for the rest of your life. But it's not as easy as people think. You just get the PhD. You're like, yes, bitch, let's go. Like, no, this is just the beginning. And I remember my advisor. He was always like, oh, you got your master's. Well, that's the easy part. I'm like, what, bitch? I'm like one of the two people in both sides of my hat family to have a master's. And then finally, I finished my dissertation. And they're like, okay, so that's the easy part. So now it's going to get good. I'm like, what? I just got a fucking PhD. You telling me that it's easy? And it's always like that. It's always like that. But I know there's a goal, right? Que hay una meta. And I think it's worth it for two reasons. One, because me va a dar seguridad económica and everything. But also, I'm going to get to publish the book that I want to publish, because this is something that I really want to do and that I'm very passionate about.
What are you going to publish a book about?
There's two books that I have in mind. The second book, I'm not going to tell anybody because it's so good and it's going to make me famous, so I don't want to tell anybody about it. The first book, it's on...
It is!
Okay. The first book, it's on my dissertation, which is on the visual culture of violence and martyrdom. And so that's what I've been working on my dissertation, and that's what I did. And basically, I'm just going to expand some of those ideas to cover 19th century and 20th century. And thank God for this new job, because they basically pushed me and they're like, you should have a class that has to do with your research. So I'm going to use my graduate seminar to do my research. So it's basically like I'm working on my book, but at the same time, I'm going to have my students, which is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we're proposing the ideas, and then you want to tell everybody what the idea of the exhibition is?
Oh, sure. We're still on this? Okay.
Let's get into it, because it's good.
Well, some of you know that I do a lot of work based on José María Velasco's work, which I actually mm-hmm. learned about from Babelito, from going mm-hmm. to your art classes, to your art history classes. So what I do is I take his old paintings, 19th century landscape paintings, and I make them into piñatas.
Okay, so tell people why. Why Velasco? Like, why are you so attracted to Velasco?
Because when I first saw the paintings, I was really drawn to, like, how romantic they were and how, mm-hmm. like, almost cinematic they look. Like, they look like stills from a movie or something. And then they also, and at the same time, I was doing research about Frida and Symbols of the Nation and, like, this Mexican nationality that I really don't, nationalism, I should say, yes. that I didn't mm-hmm. really know about. Yeah. So once I found his paintings and I'm like, I've been to some of those areas, and it's bullshit. Like, it doesn't really, it really doesn't look like that. Yeah, and I literally said, that's like a fluffy version of Mexico. And then I'm thinking, fluffy, piñata, boom. So I started making like my favorite ones. I did like the Valley of Mexico from Santa Isabel, right? Visto desde uh-huh. Santa Isabel. And then I did Vistos desde Atlisco, right? Like the, mm-hmm. you can see the popo in the background. Like the volcano, but I didn't make them to scale. I just made big replicas, like however I wanted, like a big mm-hmm. painting. Like they're usually like 4 feet, like 5 feet by 4 feet. So then last year I had the brilliant idea of making them to scale. And then I'm like, I'm going to make every single one that's ever been documented to scale. And I found the website that has, like, all of them archived, mm-hmm. like, with exact measurement, like, down to, like, the millimeter or whatever. And so that's what I'm doing. That's what I started doing last year. So
yeah,
this will be a continuation of that project.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you're curating the paintings that I'm making for the top floor of the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the bottom floor of the museum,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to do a replica of the Velasco painting that is at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. Like,
oh my God, they have a Velasco.
They have two, bitch.
That's so exciting.
It's called Valle de Mexico. Oh, no, it's the Valle de Oaxaca they have in Philadelphia. So I'm going to make a giant Valle de Oaxaca, basically, that's going to go on the, like, okay, so this museum is so interesting because it's like an old library that was converted into a museum. And then they dug out the side of the hill that it's on. So it like exposed the basement of the museum.
Oh, wow.
So it looks like an old lot. And then they made it into another floor.
Lo cubrieron con windows.
Yeah. So it looks like an old building sitting on top of a glass cube kind of thing. It looks cool. So that glass area is where I'm going to make a giant installation.
That's so cool.
So I'll be there for like 3 weeks. Doing that installation. So all of my friends that I met in New York, in Baltimore, in Philly, in DC, come on over, baby.
Come on down.
If you're gonna come on down, come on down.
So then it was my turn, right? So because we have been having these conversations about what the visual culture of the nation, then I look at all the images and there's like 100 or something like that. There's a lot of them. And I was like, okay, I'm going to choose the ones that have those symbols of the nation. So I was like, what is it? How is Mexico represented according to this painting? So I choose one with an hacienda because, you know, the hacienda. Wait, la ves en todas las telenovelas. Like, there's this romantic idea about the hacienda system that it's so fucked up. So there's these paintings of haciendas that Velasco works. So I chose the hacienda. I chose one with colonial architecture, the church, to represent Catholicism. But then I also chose the Valley of Mexico, which has all those symbols. It has La Basilica de Guadalupe and in the Tepeyac, where the image of the Virgen de Guadalupe first comes from, that appeared to Juan Diego. And also abstraction. I look at the things that look more abstract and supposed to be so neat. The reason is because you always play with this idea of what's supposed to be popular art and what's supposed to be fine art. So these paintings were creating in an academy, right? And that's super, 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 quote unquote, what people think is fine art in the Academy of Mexico, which was one of the first art academies constructed in all of the Americas in the 1780s. And then you cover that on paper with popular stuff, with popular art making. So it's almost like you're erasing some of that shit and you're highlighting popular, quote unquote, craftsmanship. When you do that, they become a little bit abstract. So in a way, they're coming back to the idea of what's supposed to be high art. It's abstract art, right? So I like the fact that you play with those ideas back and forth. So I found some images that look just images of clouds, exercises of clouds. And I was like, oh, these are perfect because people are not going to know what they are. And they're just exercises. So this like back and forth between what's supposed to be high art, what's supposed to be popular art, what's supposed to be naturalistic art as opposed to abstract art. It's going to be a play throughout the whole entire exhibition. And that's how I'm going to base my essay on those ideas. So that got me really excited. And that's why I chose what I chose. So that was basically my job. And now I have to write the wall text. And now I have to write a long essay. And the essay is going to be very academic. I'm going to choose a bunch of sources and books. And it's going to be fun. I'm excited.
It's going to be lit.
It's going to be so lit.
Oh, how do you say that in Spanish?
Va a estar en... I was going to do it in Spanish accent, bitch. I know. Encendido? No, prendido.
Prendido.
Say it. But people say prendido. Ay, estuvo bien prendida la fiesta.
Va a estar That's bien it. Prendido el show.
Out.
La exhibición.
Oh my God. So yes, we're going to be together in Philadelphia celebrating the symbols of the nation, and I'm excited, man. It's already going to be a busy year.
Hallelujah. Amen.
Bendito sea
Dios. Hey, let's take a little break, and then when we come back, I have a listener letter.
What?
Okay. Today's episode is brought to you by Lindo Michoacan, the original Lindo Michoacan on Desert Inn in Las Vegas.
Are you telling me about the same restaurant where they marinate their carnitas in Coca-Cola y saben a, uf, a gloria?
Gloria, Dios, aleluya, amen.
Alabaré, alabaré,
alabaré, alabaré. Oh, that girl. That was actually kind of triggering. back to Lindo Michoacan, a happy place. I love that place. Excuse me. We went there just yesterday. Oh my God. And it was
that menu, it's lit.
Fresh. New super menu. Prendido. Thank you for changing the font. I can read it better. It's like there's so many menu items, everything. There's a vegetarian section, which was really helpful for me.
Yes.
And then also, the classics are there, right?
El fideo.
The fideo is there. Oh, my gosh.
Dude, for a couple bucks, you can get a whole bowl of fideo and feel like you're in la casa de tu abuelita, viendo Marimar, con la lluvia afuera. Oof, it's so good. Except that you get a live singer singing Jose Jose songs. What else do you want?
I love Lindo Michoacan. And for all Latinos to Lunch listeners, if you go there and you say you are a listener of Latinos to Lunch, they will give you 20% off your bill.
Wait a minute. ¿Cuánto?
20% off. So now that you know that, get anything you want, get some alcohol, get an organic margarita on the rocks. I recommend it.
Oof.
Because you're going to get that LWL discount, baby.
En una mano la margarita y en otra mano el fideo. That's the life.
Lindo Michoacan. Save water. Drink margarita. That's going to be really hard to match up, you fucking asshole. Why'd you do that? Okay. And we're back.
Hi.
Are you ready for this listener letter, Beach?
Oh, my God. I don't know. You look so happy, so it cannot be good. It cannot be good.
It's just a listener letter. This is from, I'm going to call this person Bob.
Bob.
Hi, Bob. So here we go. Hi, I'm Mexican-American. My mother was born in America, as were her parents. She was taught Spanish as a child and was even a translator for the hospital she worked for. Unfortunately, when I was young, I was stubborn for whatever reason and never learned. And even to this day, my Spanish is limited. As far as my own culture, even that I'm incredibly limited in that as well. My mother was an army brat and lived in bases a good majority of her life. And so far, as far as I know, she didn't experience much of Latinx Mexican culture. And as such, she didn't really teach me much about my culture, which I don't blame her for. But I've always had this sort of disconnect from a lot of my Mexican and Latinx friends when I've been around the families and I see all the traditions and experiences they have. Mm-hmm. This year, I'm working on really learning Spanish. And hopefully, by the end of the year, I'll at least be able to hold a decent conversation with someone in Spanish, mostly my boyfriends and mother, who really only talks in Spanish. Sorry for the long email, but I do have a few questions. Besides learning Spanish, do you know of anything I can do or go to that will help me learn more about myself, either as a Latinx/Mexican or as a queer POC Latinx? Have you any experience with Latinxs who have a similar story as with language barriers for their own people and who sort of grew up away from their heritage? I was wondering if you guys could discuss. Any feedback would be greatly appreciated. Thank you, Bob.
Gracias, Roberto, Bob. I'm assuming. I mean, we're starting the process.
I forgot to mention, if you want us to read your letter, email us asklwlpod@gmail.com. Okay, so Bob says, I'm learning Spanish. I'm really trying to connect with my Latinx roots. What else can I do? Help.
And I'm going to say something and people are going to hate me. But that's
say
all
it.
Right.
Say it, girl.
So shout out to you for really trying, right? No, we, not all of us have the privilege to have the time and the money to learn the language. But I love that instead of complaining, saying, oh, like, instead of acting the victim and say, I don't speak Spanish and that's all right and blah, blah, blah. He's actually trying, right? And that's something that I don't hear as often. We always try to defend ourselves because we don't speak the language, which is all right. And we should defend ourselves because there's many reasons why people don't speak the language. But if you have the time and the money to do it, that's badass, and more power to you. So that's the first thing. The second part of the question and what I want to say is that in order to understand a culture, you always have to start through its literature and through its art. So I really think that maybe there's a couple of books, just like novels, right? Like novels that maybe you can read that will get you close into ideas about the culture. Every time you travel to a new country, that should be it. I mean, now again, we don't all have the time and the privilege, but if you could read, like if you go to Colombia and if you can read a Gabriel Garcia Marquez book, it will get you a little bit closer in understanding the intricacies of the culture. Not saying that Gabriel Garcia Marquez is the authority of the culture, but you can understand a lot of things, you know what I mean? And the same thing with his art. So I will say that, I will recommend that maybe it's part of your, now that you're educating yourself and looking into understanding the language, maybe some of the literature will be good. And you could do it in either language, in Spanish and English. There's plenty of books that could help into that.
Well, he's Mexican, so what do you suggest?
A specific book on Mexican, like a Mexican literature book? What could be good? Man, I have to think about it. Because, I mean, there's certain authors that I'm thinking about and I'm just like, no, not that one. So I need to think about it. Because I got into...
Us one book at least.
Because a lot of people will say, read some Octavio Paz, pero me cae tan gordo, so I can't. Elena Poniatowska, she has really good books.
Go.
Yeah, Elena Poniatowska has some good books. And there's one book, I forgot the name of it, I'm so bad, but there's one book that talks about her upbringing as a child, so I will use that, but I need to think about it anyway.
Okay.
¿Y tú qué opinas, payasa?
I think that fuck that bullshit, just be yourself and that's enough. That's what I think.
Because, so you just dismiss everything I just said.
Yeah. I mean, I always feel like I'm never Mexican enough or good enough to be in spaces because I don't speak perfect Spanish and because, and people are,
but it's
maybe
not about, but it's
wait,
not about,
let me finish what I'm talking about.
Mm-mm.
And people always think like that I don't care about my culture. I do care about my culture, but I always find myself in this place where it's like I'm never enough because I am an American, right? I was born here in the United States and I love my Guatemalan and my Mexican culture, but I also love like American pop culture and I know a lot about that. Yeah. So now that I have a podcast called Latinos Who Lunch and that I make art about my identity, which happens to be Latinx, then that's all people want to hear about. But like if I talk about like Carol Channing, people are like, well, That's not on brand for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So sometimes I want to say what I'm saying right now. It's like, fuck it. Mm-hmm. Be who you want to be, bitch. And then, I'm saying this because I'm feeling this right now because I'm about to head to Spain, right?
And they're going to ask you to perform identity. Yes.
For the past month, I've been like, oh my God, I got to watch some Spanish movies. I got to like read Spanish. I got to watch everything in Spanish because I got to get ready to go to Spain. And then finally, after stressing about it for weeks, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be just fine. I'm going to go to Spain and speak Spanglish. And obviously, they asked me to be there for a reason. I'm not going to change who I am to fit to whatever society thinks I should be. So that's all I'm saying. I'm saying that Bob is enough. And he was raised in a very unique way.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that he's trying to learn about his culture and his roots. Mm-hmm. But don't beat yourself up over it. Like, you are good enough already. You are a badass Mexican / Latinx person with the knowledge that you already have, mm-hmm. you know? That's all I'm trying to say.
But I think he's coming from a different perspective, though, because he's doing it for himself. And a lot of Chicanos want to understand where they're coming from and the culture. And I think that's what he's doing. And this is why I think it's important for him what he's doing, but also for his family. So it's not about other people's perception. I think in this case, I don't think it's about other people's perceptions. It's about that this is important for his partner, this is important for his family, and this is something that he's been wanting to do. And now he has the time and privilege to do it, so that's why he's reaching out. But you're absolutely right. If you're not doing it for yourself,
yeah,
because you want to do it, fuck everybody else. You shouldn't be learning Spanish, and you shouldn't be learning another people's cultures or your culture just to appease somebody else. No. This is something that it's very personal, and your own personal identity exploration.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be because, you know, like, there's pressure from society. Nope. Never.
Yeah, and it's that simple. You can just start watching Spanish movies, like Mexican movies, Spanish movies.
Mm-hmm. Soap operas, because mueven tanto las manos, so like the intention goes with the word. And I've had like a lot of my white friends, even they've learned part of the language because they watch soap operas, because they enunciate so much and then they move their hands, and it's actually easy to learn. I mean, not easy, but it helps.
Yeah, and then just, like you said, just trying. I always recommend that PBS special. That was really, to me, really changed everything that I thought about the history of Latinos in America. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Latinos in America. It's like a 4-part series. If y'all haven't watched that, bitch, put your lives together.
I'm going to try to sync that.
Right? Like, oh my gosh. Like,
that's so important. Those series are amazing.
Once I saw that, it made me understand my family more.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, that's why we're like this. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, just the way that Latinos have been treated in this country, and nobody teaches us what actually happened, you know? It's incredible.
Because we don't fit into the narrative. The narrative, it's a conflict between black and white. And then when you add a little bit of grayness in there, when you let a little bit of brownness in there, it doesn't fit the narrative. And it becomes very complicated when the reality is that we we have always struggled. We always also have benefited from the struggles, from the fights of African Americans as well. So our stories are intertwined in so many different ways. But because we're so stuck in binary systems, it has to be black and white. It has to be black and white. And I know it's changing, but it's not. So that's why those series that you're mentioning are so important.
Yeah, yeah.
So wait, is that your recommendation, girl?
What?
That series?
Yeah, fuck it. And you know, I also recommend like listening to Latino podcasts, because to be honest, doing this podcast has connected me more to my Latinidad, mm-hmm. because we meet so many people. I mean, like, when we met Luis from Nos Vemos en el Swap Meet and Pam from Café con Pam, those motherfuckers are so Mexa. Like,
we were family instantly.
Instantly. And like the way that they talked, and that, you know, I even realized that like my Spanish got better, or at least like I started adapting the phrases that you guys say, mm-hmm. Just from being around you guys, right? So like, immerse yourself in the culture, like, within your own city or wherever you are. Like, you can find those friends or find those podcasts if you don't have real friends like me.
And support local Latino businesses. Talk to el señor o la señora de los tacos. Like, just immerse yourself in everything, and that will also be part of it. Don't be afraid.
Yeah.
And if they judge you, fuck them, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, that's really easy to say, but in practice, it's not that great. I recommend Latinos in America, that PBS special, mm-hmm. and I recommend that you listen to some Latinx podcasts. Like, get in there. I mean, I can go, I can make a list right now, or you can just go on my Twitter, actually. I'm very active on Twitter. Whenever I am listening to something, I will put that what I'm listening to, so you can see what I'm consuming. Mm-hmm. And right now, I go through different phases where it's like strictly Latinx. And right now, because I've been like in this hashtag support Latinx podcast
for a while,
I'm taking a little bit of a break and I'm branching out and listening to other POCs right mm-hmm. now. But still, you know, I don't miss an episode of Songmas or Radio Menea.
De Colores.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm. those are my staples, you know. And there's really great podcasts like Locatora, Café con Chisme, all our homies over in Podcast Terra. Yeah.
Let the Reduce. Oof.
There's so many others, though, that we never talk about, but there's literally hundreds of Latinx podcasts out there.
That's so crazy. We couldn't say this when we started.
Yeah. Hundreds, bish.
Okay, so I have a recommendation to go along this idea of knowing your worth. Well, a little bit. And the art world. So recently, in my art appreciation class, we always talk about connoisseurship. What does that mean? Connoisseurship is just basically people that understand all the formal elements of a painting. El color, the color, line, form, like all the basic stuff, right?
Yeah.
And they understand it so well that they are like, oh, that's a Picasso. Oh, that's a Jackson Pollock. Oh, that's a Justin Favela. Because you understand the superficial aspects of it. However, that's very dangerous because that's just the beginning of looking at art. So there was a case that it's still going on of a lady who's a truck driver, and she went to a thrift store and she found this painting that she thought it was really ugly because beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And she said, I'm going to buy it for my friend. She bought it for $5 and the friend is like, why do I want this? This is so ugly. And then the friend tried to sell it in a garage sale, and a teacher comes in and she goes, I think this is a Jackson Pollock. Jackson Pollock is an abstract expressionist artist from New York from the 1950s, and his paintings go for hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And so basically the whole entire movie, which is called Who the Fuck is Jackson Pollock? It's about this truck driver, this badass truck driver, trying to get at least $25 million for her painting. It goes to so many lengths. Like, it's just amazing. And the important thing is that this lady by herself is threatening and challenging the whole entire world and the art market just by saying, just because I don't have the education that you guys have doesn't mean that you shouldn't give me what it's worth for this painting. It's amazing. I showed it in my class. We spent like 30 minutes talking about it because there's so many amazing topics. And it came out a long time ago. But now that I rewatched the whole thing again, I realize how valuable this movie is. So again, it's Who the Fuck is Jackson Pollock? It's a movie that you can find on YouTube. So just Google La Loca and you'll find it.
Awesome. So that's it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to watch that on the 20-hour flight that I have tomorrow.
You're going to be laughing out loud. This lady is the shit, man. She's so good.
Yay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So next week, I believe we are going to have your sisters on the podcast.
I'm so excited.
And we're going to get into it about quinceañera. So stay tuned, y'all.
It was such a good episode.
It was so fun. All right. Is that all you have to say, amigo?
That's it, girl. This is a good experiment. Hopefully the editing, it's not too painful, but... Hey.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to see you through a screen and do this.
You know what?
What?
I thought about it for a second, but I feel like once we do it 2-3 times, we're going to get used to it. Because I still can see your clues. I can still see your eyes.
Me rolling my eyes at you.
I can see when you're bored. I can see when you're happy. And that gives me the clue of saying, Emmanuel, shut up. Like, change the fucking subject.
No, you're not boring.
Ni tú te la creíste, babosa.
Whatever. And as always, you can visit us at latinoswholunch.com. Please send your emails to asklwlpod@gmail.com. If you have a question, you need help with anything, we probably can't do that, but We'll do our best. And if you have a moment, it really helps if you review us on iTunes. Rate us 5 stars.
5 stars solamente.
Because the more reviews we have, the more represented we are. And representation
is essential.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela and Emmanuel Ortega. Our intern is Carla Lagunas. Marketing assistance from Hector Aguilar. Music by the band Brownout. I'm Fabi Fav.
And I'm Babelito.
Bye. Ciao, ciao, ciao. Bye.